Welcome to the scorching arena of valor and the crucible of courage. This is the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Here in the inferno of life's greatest challenges, heroes are shaped and legends are born. Every episode is a torchlight of wisdom, casting a glow on the paths walked by those who've braved the flames and emerged stronger. In this furnace of fortitude, we'll explore tales of resilience, bravery, and the unyielding human spirit. Each guest brings their own spark of insight, lighting up the darkness and guiding us through the smoke of adversity. With Fireman Rob at the helm, prepared to delve into conversations that smolder with significance and stories that kindle the soul. It's not just a podcast, it's a beacon for all who seek to rise from the ashes and glow with purpose. So stoke the fires of your curiosity and ready your heart for tales of triumph and transformation. The flames are roaring. The stage is ablaze. Welcome to the Forged in the Fires podcast. Let the journey begin.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today, I have a distinguished guest. He is an amazing individual who has been in the military for, he was in the military for 23 years. He is, Bronze Star, 8 Meritorious Service Medals, Humanitarian Service Medal, so many more things, but we're actually going to get into that when we start to talk to him. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Oakland. Actually, a lot of people call him Oak. McCullough, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Rob, and absolutely call me Oak.
I love this. See, now I'm on the, I like this. I'm on that, that first name basis. It's such an honor to have you on. I mean, you go through all of your service history. It's amazing, but I want to take a step before that. I remember we were talking before, that you were from Illinois. Talk to me about, you know, kind of Oak growing up to be that service person, to take that step into the service. Who were you when you were younger?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in a small little farm town, about 1,200 people, and everybody knew everybody. And yep. I played baseball, basketball, football in high school. And you know, that's really where I started understanding that, you know, I was always captain of my team. So I started understanding leadership and the importance of leadership. And I really started to get some experience, and I saw that I liked it. And then when I graduated from high school, I went off to college, did 2 years at the United States Military Academy, didn't graduate from there, but then I came home and I joined ROTC and I finished up in ROTC. But, you know, during my youth, the people who really had a influence on me, one, my father, obviously. I am who I am because of him, good or bad. Yeah. And then I had two great mentors in high school, who I still stay in contact with. My basketball coach, Coach Terry Nidzwicki, and my high school history teacher, Mr. Charles Schindler, who both showed me what servant leadership is all about, that it isn't about you, it's about the people that you have the privilege to lead and serve. And I really, that was my start down the understanding that it wasn't about me. It was about the organization and the people I had the privilege to lead.
That's such a huge thing. When you talk about mentors, you know, what, especially in the military, you have all these young individuals coming into the military. How important is it to, like you said, you had a hand in commissioning over 550 second lieutenants. Those are the mentors that are going out in the field. What kind of responsibility do you feel to be able to make sure that you are putting out the same mentors as you had to be able to get to where you are?
Yeah, I think being a mentor is huge, because it is our responsibility to help develop that next generation of leaders. Right. And we need to take it seriously. I mean, I always tell people, look, we are going to reap what we sowed. And if we don't do a good job of creating that next generation of leaders, then we deserve everything we get. But, you know, one of the things that I'm always adamant about is that you can have mentors who work for you. I use the example, I was a brand new second lieutenant. I was 24 years old, took over my first platoon, and I had a platoon sergeant, and I remember him like he was like it was yesterday. Sergeant First Class Pinson. He was about 6'5", 250-pound country boy from Mississippi. Jeez. And the first day I took over, I took over and they were already out on a rehearsing a live fire exercise that they were going to do, a dismounted live fire exercise. And I showed up about lunchtime and he grabbed me by the shoulder and he said, "Come on over, sir, grab an MRE, let's have a lunch." And we went over and we sat underneath a tree and we're sitting there eating an MRE. And he said, "Look, sir," he said, you're the lieutenant, you're the boss. He said, "We'll do things any way you want to do them." He said, "But I've been in the Army 23 years. He'd been in the Army almost as long as I'd been alive. And he said, "My job is if you're going to mess up, is to tell you you're messing up. If you still want to do it that way, we'll do it that way. You're the boss." He said, "But it's my job to help teach you." And I took that seriously. And, you know, I always bounced things off of him when I could before I made a decision. But one day I walk in, I remember this vividly. One day I walk into the office and I didn't bounce anything off of him. And I said, "You know, Sergeant Pinson, I think this is what we're going to do." And he looked at me and he said, "Do you really want to do it that way?" And I said, "Well, I thought I did, but maybe not."
That's awesome.
So I think you can learn just as much from people that work for you as from people that are above you. But the other important thing I always emphasize about mentorship, and I tell all the young people I've had the privilege to mentor, I said, "Look, if you get out there and you don't have a mentor, there's nobody stepping up, go find one. I promise you there's somebody out there that wants to be your mentor." And it's huge. It really is. We've got to do a better job of coaching, training, teaching the young leaders that we have coming up today.
How hard is it though, as a young leader, to be able to be humble enough to, allow that experienced individual who hasn't gotten to your status yet? How hard is it to be humble to that information and utilize it? Because that's not easy for a lot of people, I would have to say.
It isn't, because a lot of people let their ego get in the way.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, if you want to be a leader, put your ego away. And we all have an ego. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah. No.
Anybody who says they don't is lying to you. We all have an ego.
Right.
But, you know, you got to understand, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that what your ego is what helps you become better and do better things and want to be the best at what you do. But you also have to understand that there's a time to put it to the side and listen to people. Because you don't have all the answers, you don't have all the knowledge, and you don't have all the skills. And if you understand that, then you understand the importance of using everybody on your team to help not only make you better, but make the team better and make the people on your team better.
Oh, completely. Now, I want to kind of shift this also to leadership in different scenarios, because it's so valuable. I know a lot of businesses are like, okay, we want to learn from the military because it's a high operational, effective environment that you're going into. How did it differ from your deployments for military operations as opposed to disaster relief? How did you reframe your mindset, or was it similar?
Well, I think leadership is leadership. No matter what scenario you're in, no matter what profession you're in, I always tell people, look, the principles that made me a good leader in the military are the same ones that make me a good leader in the civilian world when I ran my food bank for 2 years. So I think the principles are always the same. Now, how you use them and how you implement them and how you communicate with people changes based on the situation. And certainly how you communicate with people in a wartime situation is different than in a peacekeeping operation. I mean, I certainly approached people differently when I was in Kosovo doing a peacekeeping operation than when I was in Iraq doing wartime stuff. But right. but I think the principles stay the same. Just how you implement them changes a little bit.
Is it hard to turn those off and on? Because I think, especially like, were you younger when you were first in your first deployment? You know, those.
Yeah, I was a first lieutenant during the Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then I was a major during my deployments for Bosnia and Kosovo. So yeah, about 15 years difference.
You know, when you look back at that, what do you think some of the principles were that you changed from that first deployment to the Kosovo one?
Well, I think one of the things is I got better at communicating. You know, and I think that's one of the huge things that the things that young leaders have a hard time understanding is how to communicate effectively. Because, you know, when you're a young leader and you're the person in charge, you think you're the boss and that whatever you say goes. And when you get into like a peacekeeping operation, when you're dealing with two sides that hate each other, and I always tell people, look, Americans think they know what hate is. We have no idea what hate is. and that's a good thing.
Yes, exactly.
And so, you know, when you're trying to talk, when you bring a Serb person and an Albanian who have hated each other all their life into the same room and you're trying to negotiate something with them, you know, you first got to be able to listen. And second, you got to be able to kind of negotiate things with them. And I think that's something I learned as I grew up as a leader, how to listen. And number two, how to kind of coax people into coming to a common understanding. And that's tough. And I think it's even harder as a young lieutenant or a young leader, no matter what profession you're in, to learn those lessons. The only way you're going to learn them is to be put in those situations where you have to learn them. And that's one
and that's
of the things,
scary.
It is. And one of the things I tell, you know, every leader that I talk to is, look, never, ever, ever turn down a leadership opportunity, because that's how you learn. Look, we can sit here and talk about leadership till we can't talk anymore. And we can bring 1,000 people on here to talk about leadership and you can absorb all of it. But until you go out there and actually lead, it doesn't mean anything. It's just knowledge. And knowledge is not what makes you a leader. You got to experience and figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And the only way you're going to do that is to go out there and be a leader.
That's such a huge, I love that statement, because I always love to talk about that, is like making sure to have as many tools in your toolbox as you can, but also understanding how to use them in your own life, because that's critical. And I love your quote's perfect for that, because it says, you know, today's leaders have a responsibility to inspire the leaders of tomorrow. And that knowledge that you gain, that experiential knowledge, can you talk to me more about that when you're developing these leaders, is having them understand that experiential knowledge and how they see certain things that they do or certain things that they experience is critical to be able to communicate that, to be able to have, like your book says, your leadership legacy.
Right. So I make sure I really emphasize with everybody I talk to, but certainly with young leaders, is, look, we don't want robots.
Right.
We want you to keep your personality. We want you to keep your, whatever it is you have that makes you, you as a leader, because that's what makes you the person you are and is going to make you a good leader. If you try to be somebody else as a leader, you're going to fail. Because you don't have the same skills, knowledge, and abilities that somebody else does. You have what you have. And so you got to figure out what makes that work for you, not what works for somebody else. Because what works for me may not work for you. And that's really important that people understand that it is about them, that part of it. They have to use the skills and the knowledge and the ability they have, and they have to hone those to make them the best leader they can be. And, you know, because legacy is to me, legacy is two parts. You know, it's a very, very small part of what you actually did, maybe 20%. It does matter, because in the real world, results do matter. maybe right. in fantasy land where everybody gets a trophy and everybody's a winner, maybe not. But in the real world where we live, results matter. So you have to get results as a leader. That's you're going to be judged by that. But if that's the only thing you think your legacy is, then you're going to be very disappointed, because when you leave that organization that you led and the next leader comes in, they're going to change things. And there goes your legacy, if that's all that's about your legacy.
Oh, that's true.
That most of your legacy is about the generation of leaders that you produce that are going to take the, going to last for years and years and years. And again, I had a guy who worked for me when I ran my ROTC program. And I say he worked for me. Again, he was probably a better leader than I was, Master Sergeant David Powell.
And you're very humble, sir. I have to say, you're very humble.
Well, I mean, you got to be honest. I mean, this guy was fantastic. And again, I stay in contact with him. And I bounce things off of him every once in a while. But I said, we were sitting there talking about the importance of what we were doing, producing the next generation of leaders, not only for the Army, but for the nation.
Right.
And he looked at me and he said, you know, sir, great leadership handed down from generation to generation is what develops great nations. And I thought to myself, what a powerful quote. I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. But you know what the most powerful part of that quote is, Rob? That you can take that word nations and you can substitute anything you want for that.
It's true.
Family, university, food bank, hospital. Military, right. whatever, it doesn't matter, because every organization needs good leadership. And it's our responsibility as the current leaders to create that next generation of leaders who will then create the next generation, who will then create the next generation. And I really do believe that that is what makes an organization great. And the analogy I always use is this. Pick any sports team you want in any sport you want, baseball, basketball, football, soccer, hockey. I don't care.
Right.
Pick the teams that are annually the best, habitually the best teams, and they are the teams that grow their talent from the beginning. They're not the teams that go out there and get the free agent for 1 year. They grow their talent. They create their leaders from the ground up.
That's so true. You know, I love that you said family, because, you know, how tough is it to be that leader in your own house? Because I'm as a parent, you know, it's one of the harder jobs and most rewarding jobs that I've ever had. You have two children, you have a granddaughter and two grandsons. How does it feel to be that dad, that granddad? How does that play into that leadership legacy?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And I always tell people the two hardest leadership jobs you're ever going to have, one, leading your peers. If you can lead your peers, you can lead anybody. And number two, being the leader of your family. Right. And that's where it starts. If you can't lead your own family, then how are you going to lead somebody else?
Right.
But it's not easy. I mean, you know, it's just like any other leadership position. You got to earn it every day. You got to set the example. You got to help create them as a person, instill knowledge, instill values, instill all those things. And I take that very seriously, even as a grandfather. You know, I always kid people, I'm just an old man trying to get to heaven. There's no rules with my grandkids, but there are. I do take it seriously that I do. It is kind of my responsibility, not the responsibility, because that's their mom and dad's responsibility. But it is kind of my responsibility as well to instill some of the things that I believe are valuable for them growing up. And my wife and I take that very seriously when we spend time with our grandchildren. But it's not easy. It's not easy being a parent. If it was, then everybody be a great parent. And we all know that's not true.
And we'd all feel good all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. but I think, you know, if you just remember that, set a good example, I think that's the number one key. You know, when I, as an officer, I approached every day, even as a leader, but certainly as an officer, I approached every day that my number one job was to make everybody I had the privilege to lead want to be like me every day.
That's awesome.
And you know, I think if you approach life that way, then you're going to do okay.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. I love it. I love it. I want to make sure everybody knows. Make sure you can go to ltcoakmccullough.com. You can also go on Amazon and get your book, Your Leadership Legacy. I love the last part, Becoming the Leader You Were Meant to Be. How a lot of people always fear, like, am I going down the right path? Am I, once I go down this path, can I turn and pivot to be the leader that I want to be, because I was following this person and this wasn't right? And how hard is it, or what would you say the best tip you have for being flexible to finding your leadership style?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm a firm believer that leadership is a journey. It's not a destination. You don't get there one day and all of a sudden you're the greatest leader in the world. If you ever think that, go do something else, because you're not going to be any good at it anymore. I don't care if you have been a leader for 50 years. You can always learn something new. And I, that's the thing I always emphasize with leaders, is keep trying to improve, keep trying to learn something else. You know, learn a new technique of how to do something. Learn something new every day. Learn from the people that you have the privilege to lead. You know, think that they can't teach you something, because they certainly can. They've taught me plenty. But I think, you know, you just have to understand that we're not perfect. We're all going to make mistakes.
Right.
And as long as you learn from those mistakes, first admit the mistakes, take ownership of it, and then learn from it so that you don't do it again, then you're going to become a better leader as you go along. And that's, you owe that to the people that you have, that you're leading. They deserve for you to be the best leader you can be. But the only way you're going to get there is to continue to learn and develop, no matter how long you've been a leader.
It's so true. Now, when you take a look back at your military career, if you could put in one sentence, what would be the legacy that you feel or want to have left with that?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the servant leadership part, and creating the next generation of leaders to be that type of leader. That to me is so important, that I helped create the next generation of leaders in a servant way. And I'll give you, kind of pat my own back, I guess.
Hey, you have to. I mean, come on. I have a whole page of things that you've done.
Well, you know, this really small made print. This made me feel really good, and it made me realize that I have done some of the things that I really wanted to do. I commissioned a lady out of my ROTC program back in 2007. And last December, I was up in Savannah, Georgia, at a conference. And she happened to be stationed at Fort Stewart, Georgia, right outside Savannah. And so, she has stayed in contact with me over the years. And I told her I was going to be in the area, and she said, we got to have lunch. So I said, yeah, I'll have lunch. So we went out to lunch, and we're sitting there eating lunch and talking. And she says, you know, sir, I got some good news. She said, I just came out on the lieutenant colonel's list. You think that didn't make me feel old?
Oh, yeah.
but I said, congratulations. I said, so what do you want to do now that you're at this point in your career? And she said, I only have one goal left. I want to go back, and I want to be the professor of military science at the University of South Alabama. And I want to run that program like you did you commissioned me. And, you know, that just made me realize that I've had some influence, and I've done some of the things that I wanted to do.
I absolutely love that. That is proof positive that, you know, your mentorship, your leadership is going to change other people's lives. And I always say, you never know what you're going to hear from people that you've affected. And like, you don't do it because of that. You do it because you want to be that great leader, right?
That's right. Well, you know, one of the things that I'm a firm believer in, because as a leader, you are going to make a difference in somebody's life every day.
Right.
Why not make a conscious decision to make a positive difference in people's lives? And, you know, that I challenge every single lieutenant that I have helped commission. One of the things I challenge them is every day go out and find one person and make a positive difference in their life. Just one. Just imagine how much better our families would be, our communities would be, our neighborhoods would be, our cities would be, our organizations would be if we made one positive difference, if everybody made one positive difference every day in somebody's life.
Jeez, yeah. That'd be amazing. That would literally be one of those things that would change the world.
It would. And it's not, I'm not telling you to go find 10, one.
Right.
Not that hard.
No, no. I love it. Well, make sure you go to, it's Lieutenant Colonel. So it's LTC Oak McCullough at r.com. I'm sorry. Make sure you go to Amazon, get his book, Your Leadership Legacy, Become the Leader You Were Meant to Be. Thank you so much for joining me, but I actually have three questions before we leave. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. First question. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and ask yourself and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's only like 3 years ago, right, Oak?
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. I think the number one thing I would tell myself is become a better listener.
And
it took me a long time to get there, but I think I'm a pretty good listener now.
I love that. All right. The second question, everybody's going through struggles and challenges in their lives. If you could give them two habits that they can incorporate into their daily life, whether it's in the morning, afternoon, or evening, what would those two habits be to continue to move forward in their life?
Number one is reflection. I am a huge believer in reflection, you know, and I believe there's two parts to that. At every major event you do, reflect on that, but also add it to your daily routine. I every night before I go to bed, I go through a couple habits. I believe in routines inside of routines.
Yeah.
but one of the things I do every single day before I go to bed is I think, what did I accomplish today? What did I want to accomplish? How can I do what I did better? And I think if you add reflection to your life, I think you will see a huge change in your life. You'll see that you're getting better every single time you do something. And the other thing that I would tell people is develop a routine.
Yeah.
You know, I start every single day exactly the same. I get up, I listen to the daily mass, I read a chapter in the Bible, and I say my daily prayers. Every morning, I don't care where I am in the world, that's what I do. Wow. But the first thing kind of sets me off on the right path.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, make them habits, make them, you know, good habits, and develop that routine. So have routines inside of routines. Do the same thing the same way as much as possible.
I love that. I love that. This last one's going to be exciting because I have no idea where you'll go with this. So if you could have coffee at a firehouse table, so in other words, all questions are on the table, you can ask whatever, everything's going to be answered, with three people that can be deceased or alive, who would those three people be and why would you choose them?
Wow.
That's a fun one.
Number one, I'll pick a live person. Number one, Elon Musk.
Oh, there you go.
You know, whether you like him or hate him, and there's plenty of people on both sides of that, you know, he is an amazing man, and I would love to pick his brain.
Love that.
Yeah, I think he certainly is a huge influence in the world today, and I don't think it's over. So I would love to do that. Number two, I think President Ronald Reagan.
Oh, that's a good one.
He was a hero of mine when I was growing up. You know, my young years in the Army, he was the president. My young years in the Army, and I looked up to him and thought he was doing a good job. And I would love to sit down and talk to him. And I think the third person that I would want to talk to is Vince Lombardi.
Oh, you run right up into Wisconsin. I love this.
Well, you know, and being a Chicago Bears fan.
Yeah, you're going to get ostracized.
That hurts me to say that. But you know, without a doubt, the greatest football coach and maybe even the greatest coach that's ever lived. You know, I use a lot of his quotes, and I put a few of them in my book, and I use them all the time in my talk, because he understood, again, he was a servant. He was a demanding leader, but he was a servant leader. He understood that it wasn't just about winning championships, although he was very good at that.
Yeah.
He understood it was about making better people and making not only making his team better, but making the people on his team better. And that just fits right into my philosophy. And he's one of the reasons I probably have that philosophy, but I would love to pick his brain.
I love that. Well, Oak, it's been such an honor and a privilege to have you on here today. And, you know, I appreciate all you're doing, and make sure you go out there and buy his book, Your Leadership Legacy. Thanks again, Oak, for being on today.
Oh, thanks, Rob. This was great.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And please share this episode with a friend or family member. To find out more about Fireman Rob, or if you have a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.